Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Do you hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Second part of our exclusive interview with J.K. Rowling. This is Pottercast number 131.
Wow.
Woohoo!
And I'm back, guys. I'm back.
It's kind of sad that she's not here anymore, though. I was getting so used to it.
No.
I know. Who are you getting used to? Melvin being gone or Joe being here?
No, our lovely fourth co-host.
So Joe brings us together, people. She comes. She comes around, and I won't leave again. No, seriously, we had so. Wasn't it just so much fun for you guys?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, I can't even begin. I mean, to describe it. This. I need to start my blog now because
you've been saying that for years.
Yeah,
I know, but it is, if there's ever in a moment that it's worth it, just so I could try to get some of that experience out a little more.
Well, let's talk about this in a few minutes. We still haven't said who we are in case Joe tell you.
Sure.
I'm Melissa, and I'm here with Sue and John.
Hello.
I'm the boy's voice.
John's the boy's voice.
That's the boy. I'm John.
And let's do our news so that we can talk about the interview and then present for you the last piece of J.K. Rowling.
Well, the big news, of course, is Joe coming on Pottercast, but I guess there was another thing. We did see our first look at the J.K. Rowling documentary, which I thought was pretty cool.
Really touching.
Very, very much so.
I cannot wait to watch that thing. Oh, my God.
And by the time this comes out, you'll have seen the second bit they sent us.
Yeah. There'll be two. The first one that we saw was when Joe actually was, like, finished writing Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows when she was in that Balmoral Hotel. And that was, wow. Just gave you chills, you know, to know. She goes, I finished it. Yep. Yes, I finished it. I mean,
wow. The look
you know
what
I love face. About that, though, is that it just shows how real Joe is, and that she knew that this was going to be on her documentary, but she, you know, this is as honest as you could get to probably her writing environment, with how messy her desk was, and, you know, nothing was tidied up for this. It was just an honest, true moment, and if this is what that whole documentary is like, I just am so excited to watch this thing.
Well, we don't know when it's going to be published. We don't know when it will run in America. We'll find out as soon as we find out. It will go on the website. The UK listeners.
Yeah.
UK listeners. I'm out of practice. The UK audience will be able to see this on the 30th on ITV.
Everybody needs to make a friend with somebody in the ARC who has a TiVo.
Yeah.
We can't put the entire documentary on Leaky. I'm very sorry, but I think that would be cutting.
What if we do a screenshot for every, you know, every second?
Four times a second. No, yeah.
Speaking of that,
the flip book of the documentary. Yeah. No, yeah. I think that would cut into James Runcie's profits for the documentary, which he hardly deserves. So,
But by the time that this program will be broadcast. Well, I've seen the second clip, which is actually a very emotional clip of Joe going back to where it all began for her when she first, in the flat, that now famous flat, where she wrote Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone or Sorcerer's Stone.
And how have you guys already seen it? I'm jealous. I'm out of the loop.
Sue and I are in the news club.
I don't want to be in the news club.
You're not in the news club.
No. If you think John should be able to post news, send your emails.
Here we go. No, but anyway, she's walking in. She goes into the bedroom of whoever's living there now, and there are Harry Potter books on the shelf.
Yeah.
She told them that they were coming. That'd be an awful big surprise to whoever was living there.
You have to know you were living in J.K. Rowling's old flat.
Yeah.
What's that?
You'd have to know that you were living in J.K. Rowling's
apartment.
I know, but
you wouldn't always expect a documentary crew to just show up.
I'm pretty sure they cleared it with
you. They're just sitting there eating breakfast in their underwear. Here comes the documentary crew.
No.
J.K. Rowling. No, of course not.
No.
That'd be awesome, though.
It's a very poignant moment, actually, when she's talking about, you know, what a struggle it had been, and for her to go back and see her published works in this yeah. very room. And it's just...
Oh, it's an extraordinary moment. It's great. It's,
you know. So she was an amazing woman, you know, and I can't wait to see that documentary. I hope it comes up, is released here in the United States. I think
of course it will.
I'm sure it will be. And I'm sure that, you know, somebody's going to end up with it on YouTube for a while. At least we know that's going to happen. I know ITV will put it on a claim, but don't do that. Anyway,
you know, there's been a lot of press about Joe lately, and I have to say there was a very good article written. Joe was not named the Time Persons of the Year, but she was named runner-up in Time Magazine, which is always gives out their famous awards of the year about, you know, usually people who are quite have made significant contributions to society. And for Joe to get even mentioned, like, in the same breath as, like, Al Gore and Putin is just pretty amazing. But the article they wrote about Joe is really quite... Well done.
But you have to, I mean, Vladimir Putin, Al Gore, the president of China, like, you know it's completely, exactly, and a children's author, and it's amazing. It's just, to be third on that list is an incredible achievement, and the article is one of the best articles I've ever seen written about the phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. One of our staffers helped write it.
Yes. Gina, you should say hello. Gina, or congratulations.
Gina Elliott.
Yeah.
Congratulations. That's fantastic. We're very proud of you.
You know, in the middle, so we're all talking about books, but the Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince is currently in production right now, and there has been more casting news. We found, like, as we heard kind of last week when Joe kind of was talking about going to the set, and she thought Matt Lewis might play Cormac McLaggen. Now they actually cast him, so we got the name of that, and Blaise Zambini's been cast, and Romilda Devane. Oh, I just love that name.
Romilda Devane, it's a fantastic name. I'm just so glad that she's cast, which means they're keeping the whole cauldron things. Oh, man, that's going to be one funny scene, because Rupert Grint is such a good comedic actor, and he gets so much of it in this film. So fingers crossed that it's as funny as it could be.
You know, but it's really good, though, because they cast these parts that, you know, we think, oh, maybe not. But, I mean, here they have a new Katie Bell, but they're casting a friend, Leanne, and, you know, Marcus Belby. I mean, these are kind of, like, not really huge things, but it's just that they're keeping that in, and it's just really, really cool.
Well, I mean, they cast Pansy Parkinson, too.
Well,
and
they
the
recast
movies,
Pansy Parkinson.
And she didn't do anything.
Well, no. They recast Pansy Parkinson, the old Pansy Parkinson.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They've casted people before, and they just kind of are background characters. But
well, not really, because they had somebody who sort of probably was Michael Korner, but they didn't name him Michael Korner.
Right.
You know? I think there's a difference when you get a name. Actors, correct me on this, but I think there's some sort of qualitative financial difference than when you get a name as a cast member. That if you are unnamed, it's a different pay scale.
Yeah.
So they probably only name who they need to name.
Props to Nigel.
Yeah, exactly.
Nigel, the mysterious kid who nobody knows. Yeah.
I don't know where.
We love that mysterious kid. Oh, I know this is an issue, and I know this is kind of a funny thing. We did see the release of the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix DVD, and there was a really cool gift set that came out, and you could purchase it in the new formats, the high definition formats. And if you're one that wanted to buy this and you bought it in the Blu-ray format, you might have got a surprise, because one of the wrong discs was in there for Goblet of Fire in the wrong format. So there's another one.
Was it like the Japanese edition or something?
No, it was the high definition. It is like, say you bought it in Blu-ray, and then you were going to go say, oh, I'm going to watch Goblet of Fire, and you got to put it in, but it's not
it's the other
player.
Format.
It's in the wrong format,
so
it's just the one.
That's
excellent.
I mean.
Well, I'm sure they're fixing it. It'll be no problem. People will just send it back and probably cool the mail too.
Yeah, they are. They're going to replace it. And we have the phone number on our website now, so you can call. But it's just kind of like...
Is it like on the telephone, like down at the bottom? You know? Is it like on a telephone, like a tip line down at the bottom?
Yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah. I heard that they put all of the tables together in the Great Hall, and they have all the cast taking calls from everybody. And sorting them all out, so it's, you know, it's perfect. And you can call the line, and the Muggle liaison office will pick up, and Emma Watson will be there to take a call.
Yeah, we have gotten so many calls, so many emails called. You hear me? So many emails and comments from people who want the number and want to know if it's real. And there's nothing else to tell you but that. Yeah, it's real. And we're sorry.
We can't give it up.
Secret. Right. That number.
It took us years to get that number.
It's top secret now.
Yeah.
We might have to call it again sometime.
I think we should. You know, I'd like to call Professor Sprout, but there's a big shock.
Well, on that note,
yes,
that's who I will call first.
Yeah. Let's talk about this for a minute. I mean, we're gonna most of you are probably skipping past this anyway to get to where you hear Joe's voice, but
right.
We were very, 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 very honored when Joe came on our podcast last week.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of you have asked. I can't give the full thing about how it happened, but she's the one who said it. She said
it was her idea.
It was her idea. It took me by complete. I think I stared into space for about 15 seconds because there comes a point where you don't ask Joe because you know she's got to know she's welcome at any time and that it would be wonderful for us. You know what I mean?
Totally.
She just said, I should come on a podcast. I was like, yeah, why don't you do that? So we set it up and we wanted to, there were some worries at some point that what she would say would conflict with the documentary, but I think that now she's seen a copy of the documentary. So she knew what not to, what not to repeat. And she was just such a team, just so willing to go with the flow, anything that we were doing, and to act, you know?
I mean, they all heard it. I mean,
they
nothing
did.
That you heard there, there was no, second cut of anything that you heard that didn't get aired. I mean, she nailed everything on the first go, and, the edits that we made to this thing was really only just tightening up, a little bit of dead space here and there, and nothing. We didn't cut out anything of significance.
No.
There's a few outtakes that we're holding on to, and that will probably spread across the next few shows. But we gave you guys everything that we were possibly able to squeeze out of that time. So you're not missing out on nothing. She did an awesome job.
When we gave you the little rundown for how the intro would work and how she would pick up the phone.
Yeah.
What was her reaction? Right, great. So you want me sleepy? Do you want me mad? Do you want me this?
Like,
I was like, wow.
Oh, that was goody too. She's like, now should I be grumpy you're calling or should I be happy you're calling?
We should explain who Fitty is. Fitty is, do you want to say that Fitty is her?
Yeah, Fitty is the Fitty, Joe's PA, who is a wonderful and very patient person.
She's the one who picked up first after we punched in the numbers for
and should we explain about the phone number because we've gotten quite a few questions about that
magic. Guys, it's there's magic of audio recording and editing that happened there. And they were totally game for it and thought it was a lot of fun. And Fitty basically is, I mean, as you if you read the note that J.K. Rowling put on her website when Deathly Hallows was about to be published, she put all these acknowledgments and she said Fitty, who's stood between her and a tide of requests, and I'm telling you, it is 118% true. The requests that come in, if she had to sit there and answer them all, she would never write another word in her life. And so Fitty is this force of organization, of kindness, and has that extra tweak of being somebody who sort of gets what somebody needs, anticipates it.
Fitty rocks.
She's fantastic. She's amazing. So,
it's so hard. People kept asking me, well, what was your favorite moment? I don't know. Just hearing Fitty's voice was amazing. But then when Joe said, this better not be about the house elves.
That was all her, too.
It was all her. I mean, you really can't describe that moment. It's just,
Do you guys remember, I remember when Melissa called and told us about this interview. I was in school.
Yes.
And I had a few weeks left before I wrapped up with finals.
I get to do that to you a lot.
What's that?
I get to do that to you guys a lot. It makes me happy.
I get to call
you up and do scream.
I'm sitting there and I had to run into an empty classroom and I'm pretty much running laps around the desks in this room. I'm like, no way. You got to be kidding me. There's no way. And we should have taped that one, but I think we actually taped the conversation with Sue, didn't we?
No. Uh-uh.
Or that was something else.
Was something else. No,
that was
when
we found out we were going to see her in New York.
Right, exactly. Yeah. No, we didn't tape her. It was so wonderful. You guys actually, of all the things I've been able to tell you that have been great like that, this is the first time you flat out did not believe me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I ask your full crap.
It's just a joke.
Because I didn't quite believe it myself. You know?
And since then, we've talked about it so many times. I mean, we wanted to make the absolute most of the opportunity, and you guys had these planning documents going.
Oh, gosh.
You know, in the leaky planning area, and we had, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of questions, or I would look at it and be like, you guys, we're not going to get to even a tenth of this.
And
this
we didn't.
Insane.
And we didn't. We have plenty more.
Yeah.
And there's so many more questions that you can always ask, and even going on the boards afterwards and hearing what some of you guys wanted to hear, it's like, oh, that's good too. And
yeah, why didn't we ask that?
But there's so many, you know, I mean, your mind, when you're sitting there actually speaking to her, your mind goes, is just exploding. It really is. And it's so hard to, like, not want to stop and listen to what she's saying, and as opposed to try and think of a question, what you want to follow up, and not be just like a, you know, and it was, so for me, that was hard, you know, just not, because I've done many interviews before, but it was just so hard not to want to just...
Yeah. But, no, you just want to talk. You just want to talk, and you have to stop yourself and let her talk, which is the hard part.
I mean, what did it for me, though, what totally put me at ease is just hearing her, how she talks about this and having it be so similar to how we talk about it. Because you heard her give the line about how, you know, it's like, you know, I'm sorry, you know, to speak as if this is all real for a moment here, but, like, you know, some part of our minds kind of think that way, too. You kind of have to.
Yeah.
Just to really delve into everything. And she does it. I mean, this was her life for 17 years. So if anyone is going to understand what it is to be totally immersed with this and to want to know more and, you know, to care about the characters so much to want to know more, I mean, she will be the one to get it. And
it'll
put you right at ease. You can't even be nervous anymore after that point, because she wants to talk about it just as much as you do.
And she was so warm and funny, and it's just, you can hear it in her voice. You were talking about that, her love. You just, you know, it's just amazing just to hear her in her voice. That's why so many people have just remarked on, because we don't get to hear her talk so freely. It's been so, I think, very rare. Usually it's either at a press conference and she's got a million journalists shouting at her and just, you know.
Yeah.
You have the journalists asking her the same stuff over and over again.
Same stuff over. God, and I think maybe it's a relief to sit down with people who treat her world, or we aim to treat her world with the respect that she has for it, and the love and the absorption, and you just want to talk about it and just want to have more. And I think that while she's willing to do that, we are more than willing to listen. But it was just so wonderful to listen to you guys, because I've been very spoiled. I've had a chance to be comfortable with, you know, talking to Joe, and we were all very worried. All three of us were very worried that Joe would come on and we'd all be like,
Joe, how you doing?
But it wasn't like that. You guys were awesome. I was just so proud sitting there. It was great.
This was like 9:30 in the morning too, so it's like rolling out of bed here, sitting down, turning the thing on, and there's Joe on the other end. It's like, oh my God.
No, but you guys rose to it beautifully. I'm just so
it couldn't have been any more fun. And the idea that she'd be interested in joining us again sometime is just too good to be true.
Yeah, we haven't even said that yet. You guys haven't heard that part yet, have you?
No, it's good.
You'll get to that part in the show. You'll hear our reaction to that, though.
It's just so fabulous. And it's such a great treat for not just us, but for the entire website and all of the people that listen to it. And I just think that Jo is a class act, and she cares about her readers. And, you know.
No, I thought it was just so wonderful. A couple of media blogs said things like this, like, how amazing is this? What a media success story this is, that an author of something so huge, the same week she's being named among Al Gore, Vladimir Putin, you know, to sit down and get to it on a nitty-gritty level with the people who want to hear it most is just, it's a very giving thing for somebody in her stature to do. And she sounded just completely excited to do it. And not enough can be said about how Jo has maintained her human down-to-earthness over this incredible upheaval in her life.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah, totally. And I did want to announce to clear a couple of things. I will be traveling with my copy of Beetle. I will not keep it to myself. I'll be going to libraries and letting school children read it.
I wait your reviews.
They put on little mittens and everything and make sure not to smudge it up. Because, come
mittens?
On.
Those white gloves that they wear in all the pictures?
Uh-huh. Exactly. I'll be supplying a pair to every student. But they must return them. I mean, come on, I'm not made of money here, and I'll get them washed.
Oh, come on. You got all that bling. Are they going to be special bling?
I'm not going to chip off chip off diamonds off the cover just so I can pay for the kids' gloves. Come on.
I'm sorry, that was my favorite thing. You don't think it was too bling?
She said that part. She said it.
Brian. It was hilarious. I could. J.K. Rowling talking about bling. Fantastic.
Man. Well, I mean, gosh. I can't wait to play the rest of this for everybody.
Yeah.
You guys can all blame me. I insisted to split this off. It could have fit into one show. A lot of you guys were saying, oh, come on, it's so short. But no, you can't devour Joe all in one sitting like that.
No.
You have to spread it out.
When we did the interview back in 2005, we put it over three releases, but we did it day. I have to comment on that too. Back then, and even though it was so wonderful the way it was handled, it still was. We sent it through her people. Her people were involved. There were lawyers. There were this. There were agents. There were this. There were that. It was more of a kind of like a big press event. This was like we had just out of the blue called her up one day. She never asked for oversight. We just recorded it, and what we recorded is what you get. And it's fantastic. It's a very unprotected thing, and it's like a statement of trust, which is really fabulous for us.
That's it exactly. I would think. I mean, she went. I don't think she would have came to the show if she didn't. If that trust wasn't felt there mutually. So.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's it from us for the rest of this episode. I think it's time to get back to Joe.
Should we call up the Muggle liaison office again and get her back online?
I think that maybe they've seen through that at this point.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not.
All right, next week, a couple of quick things. Next week is our New Year's show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That'll be awesome. I know a lot of you guys may be new listeners, maybe new subscribers. We're going to have a show that's going to kind of wrap up some of the coolest things we've talked about this past year. And Lord knows there's been a lot happened this year with the releases of the book and the movie and the Pottercast tour we did talking about the book release and all of the theories that we talked about before Hollows, and then all the ones that came true and all the ones that were ridiculous. And we'll try to cram as much of it as we can into next week's episode. And we might even be able to allow you guys to synchronize your iPods for the New Year's countdown clock so we can count down with you to New Year's New Year's Eve with Pottercast is your idea of an awesome night, which, why not? We're pretty awesome.
Why not? We should have done a countdown with Joe and played it on a... next week's show is going to be great. We have, there's so much. How many shows have we done this year? I think that's about 60 shows.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did so many with our tour. Amazing.
The tour was completely ridiculous. So, that's that. And merry, 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 merry Christmas. Happy late Hanukkah.
Yes.
Happy Kwanzaa. Whatever it is you celebrate, we hope that you're having a great one.
And we will throw it back to the interview with Joe.
Yay!
We have to ask this or we'll get yelled at. Draco Malfoy. Did he graduate? And who did he marry? It wasn't Pansy, right? Or was it?
No, God, it wasn't Pansy. Fuck, I love her. I don't love Draco, but I really dislike her. She's every girl who ever teased me at school. She's the anti-Hermione. I loathe her. Sorry. Sidetracked there by my latent bitterness. He married Astoria Greengrass.
Really? Check her name.
Greengrass sounds familiar.
Younger sister of Daphne. So she's two years younger than he was at Hogwarts. And anyway, there you are. That's who he marries.
Speaking of Gryffindor students, do you have the names of those two Gryffindor girls?
Oh, God.
You know what? Pressure's on.
I swear to you, I will find the damn notebook and I will put it on my website. I will put it on my website. That will be my gift to you.
Your whole notebook?
No, are you mad? That'd be awesome. That's for the Scottish book. No.
Of course.
I will put
that's so funny because this thing has been, it's been like 5 years or something.
Yeah, exactly. we've been talking about that for 4 years, I think it is now.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not going to shatter the earth or anything once we figure out.
No, I don't. To be honest, I really don't think it will, because I never mentioned that once in the canister.
Yeah, it's just like a funny little,
Yeah,
Okay. So the most important question, did they sample a recording of your dog for when they did your website?
Do you know what? I think they did. My website is really, that's not my wallpaper. I would really like the opportunity to say my taste is not that bad. That's not good wallpaper. And with no offense to the guy who did the design, but loads of it's really accurate. Under the desk, I nearly used a very rude word, all the rubbish on the floor and on the desk was taken from life. They took a photograph of my desk and its actual...
Do you actually have a do not disturb sign?
Do you know what? I now do, because I took one out of the Balmoral Hotel where I finished Deathly Hallows. So I've got I now have a do not disturb sign from that hotel on the door of my study. Yeah,
very. I don't know if you recognized when we gave you that little basket in New York. We had done up some do not disturb signs and the same design of your site for everybody.
It was very, very, very cool. Thank you. It was great seeing you all there. That was the best event I've ever done. I loved that event.
It was fantastic, just being there for those moments. And you were just on a roll, Joe.
You know, the sense of liberation, I cannot, no one, and I mean that, maybe Stephen King. You know, Stephen King maybe knows what it feels like, but I think that anyone who can, you cannot imagine what it feels like after 17 years to be finished, both in a good way and in a bad way. It was so much part of my life. Now, I know that millions of people feel huge ownership over the world now, and that's a wonderful thing that they do. They simply can't feel it the way I felt it. I know where I was when I wrote every part of those books. I know where I was when I thought of Quidditch and made up Professor Sprout, and all of these things are inextricably linked with stuff that was going on in my life at the time. And Harry really saved me during some bleak moments in my life. So it's been massive saying goodbye. But the upside, you saw the upside at Carnegie Hall, and that was, you can ask me, readers can now ask me anything, and I don't have to say, you'll find that out in book 5. I can't tell you that. Yeah. It's important for the ending of book 7. Oh, what a good question. Yeah. What a shame you'll find out in the next book. You know, all that rubbish, which no author wants to be constantly putting people off when it's very flattering that they want to know. But equally, you know that the author knows how much pleasure you'll be ruining if you do spill the beans 3 years early.
Sure.
So, yeah, but that night I was on a roll, you're right, because I had the best questions and the most amazing crowd turned up. That was a really magical night for me. Magical. The adjective that is most often used in connection with Harry Potter. Well, it's such a cliche, but it was. That night was.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of questions still for you, Joe, like stuff about that mysterious Department of Mysteries. Can you tell us what was love room? I mean,
what was that mysterious room? We don't know what it was in the love room. Yes, it was.
Thank you. Well, see, I told you I'm in Hufflepuff. You know, I'm not.
No. I think what's in the love room is the place where they study what love means. So that room, I believe, would have at its center a kind of fountain or well containing a love potion, a very powerful love potion. You know that the first time they ever enter Slughorn's potions class, and he starts talking about Amortentia, the love potion, and he says it's the most dangerous one in the room. Well, that's what they would have found in the love room. So you would see wizards and witches taking it. They would study the effects. The room, of course, has to be locked. And you know, again, there's this thread running through the books, what love does, and it raises people to the heights of absolute heroism, as in Lily, Harry, Neville. And it also leads them into acts of foolishness and even evil, which is Bellatrix, and also Dumbledore. He became foolish. He lost his center, his moral center, when he became infatuated. So that's what it does. That's what makes it dangerous. And Bellatrix was, as I think is clear, but you know, I doubt that people will be particularly shocked to hear, because I'm sure they've deduced that Bellatrix is madly romantically in love with Voldemort. This is, you know, that's the obsession of her life. And I believe that Helena Bonham Carter had to be asked to tone it down after she was... the producer called me and said, you know, give me some background on Bellatrix so we can, you know, tell Helena about it. And I said, well, of course, this is a sexual attraction. She's madly in love with this man and obsessed by him. Apparently, they had to ask her to bring it down because she was being a bit too sexy.
Wow, that's so awesome. You know, you mentioned the movies. I mean, somebody who's most amazing in the movies is Alan Rickman as Snape.
Yeah, definitely.
How
He's so good. How soon did you tell him about his character? I mean, how much did he know?
Very early on that he'd been in love with Lily, because I told him so. We needed to have a conversation early on. He needed to understand, I think, and did completely understand where this bitterness towards this boy, who's living proof of her preference for another man, came from.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told him that. He was the only person who knew that for a long, long time. Yeah.
He's so good. You know, Snape is so amazing. Was he truly meant to be in Slytherin, Snape?
Yes, God, yes, definitely. At the time when he was sorted, I believe what Dumbledore believes when he says to Snape in the very last book, sometimes I think we sort too soon. To judge someone at the age of 11, to judge them, to set their future course so young, seems to me to be a very harsh thing to do. And it doesn't take it into account the fact that we do change and evolve. A lot of people are at 40 what they were at 11, having said that. So I think the Sorting Hat is shrewd. But Snape does redeem himself. And it fails to take that into account. But then again, you could turn that on its head and say, but maybe with these people being sorted into Slytherin, someone who has the capacity to change themselves might also have the capacity to change Slytherin.
Yeah.
Wow. And how much is it that being sorted into Slytherin is, you know, sorted into good guys and bad guys here?
Well, they're not all bad. That would, you know, I know I've said this before, and I think I said it to Emerson. They are not all bad. And well, far from it. As we know, at the end, they may have a slightly more highly developed sense of self-preservation than other people. Because a part of the final battle that made me smile was Slughorn galloping back with Slytherins.
Yes.
But they'd gone off to get reinforcements first. You know what I'm saying? So, but yes, they came back. They came back to fight. So, I mean, I'm sure many people would say, well, that's common sense, isn't it? Isn't that smart to get out, get more people, and come back with them?
Yeah.
The old saying, there is no truth there in any point of view.
Mm. Yeah. Well, Sue, you had started to get into the movies, and Joe was talking about being involved here and there and things. One of the things that I know a lot of fans are talking about, and is something that is sure to sustain all of the excitement and fun from Harry Potter, is the upcoming theme park attraction in Orlando.
How strange you mention that. I was just looking at some things to do with that just right before the auction happened this morning, so I've been looking at something to do with that today.
Care to share?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've all been wondering how involved, you know, where you've been involved with. I know there's been rumors about some kind of theme park sort of thing happening for years, and they announced this one when they did recently, and everybody's dying to know, you know, what to expect and how much of it is going to have the Joe touch.
I would have to say a lot of it's going to have the Joe touch, because I've been very, very, very involved, which has been amazing. And Universal, I think I'm right in saying, and I know I may sound confused, but it is a very confusing issue, but I think I'm right in saying that these rights were Warner Brothers, not mine. However, Warner Brothers asked me, did I want it to happen? And I think they have been amazing in that respect. They, you know, as the underlying creator, as it's known in legal terms, as the underlying creator of the series, they came to me and they asked me what I felt about it. And there were a few things that I really wanted to happen if it went ahead, and the key thing for me was that if there was to be a theme park, that Stuart Craig, who is the production designer on the films, would be involved. I mean, more than involved, that he would pretty much design it, because I love the look of the films. They really mirror what's been in my imagination for all these years, and I just think he's done an incredible job. And he's an Oscar winning very well known guy in the industry, so it's not just me who thinks that. And he did consent to get involved, so I truly think that walking into the theme park will be as close as you will ever get to walking onto the film set or to walking into Hogsmeade. Better, of course, because it's 3D and you can walk around the corner and look at the back, and you know it's going to be quite incredible. I really believe that. I think I think it will be the best thing in the world of its type, having seen what I've seen.
Definitely. I mean, we've been studying those pictures that they put out, that artwork, and we're all very, very excited.
It's extraordinary. You know, I can't, I mean, obviously I can't go into detail about what they're going to do, but really seen a lot of stuff, and I think it's going to be wonderful and very well done, and I think that fans will not be at all disappointed, quite the reverse.
Awesome.
Joe, as long as you put in a good word for us to be the bartenders at the Leaky Cauldron.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult yes. job, though. I think there's going to be a fair amount of traffic. You might want to rethink that one.
Yeah. For like a day. We'll make some butterbeer, yeah. take a picture, and it'll be done. I had to ask you, it's a little thing, it's just been on my mind. What happened to Florian Fortescue?
He was killed.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want that to happen. Bizarrely, my best friend, after I named Florian Fortescue, she went and met and is soon to marry a guy called Florian, which is very bizarre, because it's not exactly a common thing.
No.
And I, because of him, I was very attached to Florian Fortescue, but he died. He died.
Well, he's an ice cream man.
In the Scottish book will reveal, there was more to that than subsequently made it into the books. It was one of those little subplots that had to be sacrificed because it was not really leading anywhere, but I did have a subplot planned for Florian.
Wow.
And it was to do with the Elder Wand. So I will definitely put that into the encyclopedia.
Speaking of the Elder Wand.
Yeah.
Can we talk about wand lore a little bit?
Absolutely. Thestrals.
Yes.
I noticed there was immediate angst about the fact that there was a thestral hair in the middle of the Elder Wand, because people were saying that Hagrid bred thestrals, but he didn't. He just bred the Hogwarts thestrals. Just to make that clear.
Yeah. Come on, people. There's a bigger world out there than Hagrid's backyard.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The only thing that Hagrid has ever created are blast-ended scroots, and I think we should all agree that he should never attempt to create a species again. So he didn't create dragons or thestrals, but he may have bred, particular members of the species.
I've been told my Patronus is a blast-ended scroot.
That's what I think it is.
I don't know what that says about me.
I could think of one thing it might say about you. I've never been in a room long enough.
Yes, Joe, and actually holds true too. No. He loves burritos.
He loves burritos.
Hey.
Let's not go there.
Oh,
you're
the burritos.
That's a podcast thing. We love food on the show. We'll talk about food.
Quite a lot. But wand lore, can you go into more detail, in a more detailed fashion, the way that the wands change hands and how different the Elder Wand is, because fans are confused.
Yeah, I am going to put up another update on my website about this, and I have one half written. Essentially, I see wands as being quasi-sentient. I think they awaken to a kind of, they're not exactly animate, but they're close to it, as close to it as you can get in an object, because they carry so much magic. So that's really the key point about a wand. Now, their reactions will vary from wand to wand. The Elder Wand is simply the most dispassionate and ruthless of wands, in that it will only take into consideration strength. So one would expect a certain amount of loyalty from one's wand. So even if you were disarmed while carrying it, even if you lost a fight while carrying it, it has developed an affinity with you that it will not give up easily. If, however, a wand is properly won in an adult duel, then a wand may switch allegiance, and it will certainly work better even if it hasn't fully switched allegiance for the person who won it. So that, of course, is what happens when Harry takes Draco's wand from him, and that's what happens when... But you know what I mean? Ron, the Blackthorn wand.
Yes, from the Snatcher. Wand, yeah.
So that would be sort of rough and ready, common or garden, a wand favouring the person who had the skill to take it. It would favour them. However, the Elder Wand knows no loyalty except strength. So it's completely unsentimental. It will only go where the power is. So if you win, then you've won the wand. So you don't need to kill with it, but as is pointed out in the books, not least by Dumbledore, because it is a wand of such immense power, almost inevitably it attracts wizards who are prepared to kill and who will kill. And also it attracts wizards like Voldemort, who confuse being prepared to murder with strength.
Interesting.
Does that clarify anything?
And we're looking forward to reading your thing out too. Hopefully it didn't...
Step on it.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I have been asked a lot of times, what about dueling club and so on? Well, I think it's clear there that in practice, where there's no real weight attached to the transference of a wand, or it's almost done for fun or purely for a competition, there's no enormous significance attached in either wizard's mind to a wand flying out of someone's hand. But there are situations in which the emotional state of wizards, where a lot hangs on a duel, that's something different. That's about real power, and that's about a transference that will have far-reaching effects in some cases. So I think the wand would behave differently then.
Very cool. One thing I wanted to make sure that we got to ask you. In 15 years' time, when the release of Albus Severus and the return to the Dark Forest comes out.
Yeah, Albus Potter and the...
Right, yeah, exactly.
And the book they said would never happen, yeah.
Oh, wow, Diane, I actually have a question. Was that just a joke? What a waste of everybody's time.
No.
I'm fired.
Go on.
Come on, Melissa, well, save me.
Well, how much of the Next Generation do you have worked out?
You'll see when you watch, or if you watch, the documentary that I've been doing.
Oh, very cool.
That I've been filmed for, because that I do talk about that quite
often. Excellent.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of the Next Generation worked out. You know, it's me. How could I not?
That's great.
Oh, it's just too fun.
We can't wait to see that.
I hope you enjoy it. The reason for doing it was a lot of people had come to me and said, we want to do a 10 years of Harry Potter special program. And, you know, they had all these different things. And for once, I was ahead of the game. And a year previously, I had found a guy who I thought would just do a great documentary, a very honest documentary, someone I got on with well, which is James Runcie. And he's also an author. So he really, you know, understood my life at a certain level that some interviewers don't. And, so we were filming for a year, and it was good, because again, this was a situation where I felt, as I do with the Scottish book, that if you're going to do it, then it should be done right. And I wanted to do something honest, and it was very nice to be able to answer questions on screen, looking back at the full experience rather than still living the experience as it was going on.
I can't wait to see it. So I think it's fabulous. I think people will just be thrilled. Thank you. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you. I think it will answer some questions, which will be good. And it's, you know, it's good to look behind the scenes in a way. And you see my haircut change a lot in a year. It's very weird looking back.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, we know that you're short on time. So
I am. I'm sorry.
No. It's Joe.
You don't need to apologize for anything. This has been amazing.
I've really loved it.
I want to tell you one quick thing. We had a test before book 7 came out. We gave fans 400 questions.
Yeah.
And we asked them to guess what would happen in the Deathly Hallows. And out of 400 questions, our top winner got 350 of them correct. And he says his name is Ricky Carter and he's from Edinburgh, but I thought for a moment it might have just been your husband, but now it's what you told us about the wombat.
No, there's not a chance it was Neil. And I know he won't mind me saying that.
But yeah, 350 questions out of 400.
That is very, very impressive.
What was his name, Melissa?
Ricky Carter.
Oh, okay. Good job, Ricky Carter.
Yeah, good job. No, that's excellent. You know, it would have been... I mean, people should have been able to guess a lot. Otherwise, I haven't done my job properly, or I've cheated the reader. The clues were there. A lot of the clues were there. But I think there were surprises. I don't think many people expected Dobby. But I have very good reasons for doing it. You know?
Hedwig.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Hedwig's alive. Hedwig was part phoenix.
Come on, Joe.
You haven't heard any of this?
Oh, dear God. Do you know what? That is the thing... I've got to say, I have virtually never read fan fiction. It's a tricky area generally for me, but it's those fan fictions that begin, because I've seen opening lines, those fan fictions that begin, my name is Lily Potter, you thought I was dead. You were wrong.
Uh-huh.
Great opening. So there are so many that start like that out there. There must be one out there somewhere. My name is Hedwig. I fell through the icy night sky. Yeah.
You were wrong. Yeah.
You were wrong.
There's a lot of theories about Hedwig, but all in fun, all in the idea that yes, we know she's, you know.
No, that's cool. The fun stuff is very, very, very funny. I have frequently laughed myself stupid reading some things. Letters I get, they're amazing.
Well, Joe, will you promise that you'll come back?
Do you know what? I will promise that, because I would love to come back. I've had so much fun.
Thank you so much.
So much. Wow.
We've had an awesome time.
It's been great. I've had an awesome time too. So I want to wish you a very Merry Christmas or whichever other religious festival you are keeping.
Thank you. Well, you know how we usually wrap the show up, Joe? We took a little inspiration from you, and we end it like we end the Potter Watch.
Love that.
Yes, we did. Did you like Potter Watch?
We had very big grins on when we read about the Potter Watch.
Poor Fred.
Poor Fred.
I know.
Poor Fred fans. We didn't even bring up Fred. Whatever. Next time.
Yeah. Whatever.
Next time.
John, I've got my hands over my face and John's like, whatever.
I love Fred.
There's a pet armadillo named Fred even.
I know.
I mean, I was torn up about charity after all this, but... Until next time, guys, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Hawkreese.
Keep each other safe, you say.
Good night.
We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's podcast was produced by the Podcast Trio and Steve Bonnet. Thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on podcast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit podcast.com.